The book of Daniel. So, Brak, it's in the Old Testament. Everything I say is apocrypha. All right, the book of Daniel. Now, because we're dealing with prophecy, I want you to notice that there are five sections dealing with his dreams and visions. Nebuchadnezzar's dream in chapter 2, and then in chapter 7, 8, 9, and then 11 and 12. In chapter 2, the dream is given, or the vision is given to Nebuchadnezzar by Daniel. In chapter 7, it's given to Daniel by an angel. In chapter 8, it's given to Daniel by Gabriel. In chapter 9, it's given to Daniel by Gabriel. And in chapters 11 and 12, it's given to Daniel by Michael. There are two archangels that we know of, Michael and Gabriel. Gabriel gives them in 8 and 9, Michael in 11 and 12. In 7, an angel, an unidentified angel. But in chapter 2, it is Daniel doing the interpreting. Everyplace else, it's the angels doing the interpreting. Now, for those of you who are linguists, chapter 1 and 9 through 12 are all in Hebrew. 2 through 8 is written in Aramaic. Different language. The first part of the book deals with the Gentiles. The last part of the book of Daniel deals with Israel. Down here, in this section, you see who the various kings are when Daniel has got these dreams and visions. And so you'll notice that the book is not chronological. But I do want you to notice that each of the visions is chronological in the sense that it moves from the present to the future. Okay, we together on that? All right. Hang on. We're going to dive in. If you've got that sheet that says the dreams and visions in Daniel, it's the most complicated sheet that I made up. And my timing is perfect. I saved it for right after lunch. Now, let's turn to Daniel chapter 2. Nebuchadnezzar is the king. So Nebuchadnezzar is having his afternoon siesta. He's sound asleep in the middle of a lecture. And he wakes up and he says, I had a dream. He says, calls all of his magicians and his astrologers, all the wise guys in the kingdom, and they all come in. He says, gentlemen, he says, I need some help. I've got a dream. He says, what I want you to do is I want you to tell me the meaning of the dream. And the astrologers and magicians say, well, that's really great, Neb. We'd be more than happy to do that for you. But you've got to tell us what the dream is. And he says, well, fellas, the fact of the matter is I forgot what the dream was. So I want you to tell me what my dream was, and then I want you to give me the interpretation. And the guy says, you got to be kidding. Nobody can do that. He says, I knew you guys were a bunch of frauds. It's obvious that you're not all that smart. If you can't even tell me my dream, you're not all that smart. Anybody can figure up an interpretation. Take him out and behead him. So he's all ticked off at it. Well, Daniel's not in the group, but he gets wind of it. And he says, hey, listen, before we start lobbing off heads, let me get along with God and see if I can figure the thing out. So he says, okay, we'll hold off. So Daniel gets it before God. He talks it over, and God says, yeah, I'll give it to you. So God gives him the dream and the interpretation. And so Daniel comes back and he says, Neb, he says, I think I got the answer for you. And so he begins to tell him about it. Now that's where we're going to break into the narrative, okay? Because we didn't need to read all that other stuff. Besides, you'd enjoy mine better than the King James Version anyway. All right, now, let's pick it up at verse 31. Now, let's see, where did we leave off in our reading? Okay. You're it? Oh, okay. Good. Then we'll go from Liette to Tom to Audrey, right on down, and we'll pick it up with Winston, and we'll just go right across again. And we're going to leave off the folks on this side over there. They're the unclean. So... No, I didn't see you, Todd. I saw Tom. All right. Let's start it with verse 31, sweetheart.
Thou, O king, sawest and behold a great image. This great image, whose brightness was excellent, stood before thee, and the form thereof was terrible.
The head of the statue was made of purest gold, and his chest and arms were made of silver, its belly and thighs of brass, its legs of iron, its feet part iron and part clay.
Okay, let's pause there for a moment. Now, I want you to notice here, he's got an image. And the image represents three kingdoms. And we're going to talk about who those kingdoms are. Now, he doesn't mention what the names of the kingdoms are. They become clear in chapter 7. But as we read through here, I want you to notice that with the metals, you have decreased value but increased strength. The gold is the most valuable but the least strong. And it moves right on down from the head of gold on down to the feet mixed with iron and clay. And let's read on now and see if we can figure out where we are on this. Okay, pause there. So we've got the first kingdom identified. It's the head in Babylon, which dated on these dates here, 612 to 539 B.C., is the head. He says, you are the head of gold. So no problem figuring out who the head is, because he tells us there. All right? Now, let's read on. All right? And after him is another kingdom, the kingdom of brass. All right? There's actually here he mentions two kingdoms. Arise another kingdom inferior to thee, and then another third kingdom over brass, which will rule over all the earth. Okay, we'll hold off on who they are. Let's pick it up at verse 40.
Thank you.
All right, let's pause there. Now, we pick it up again in Daniel 7, but I want you to notice here that the breast and the arms is the Medo-Persian Empire. Verse 30. Then the belly and the thighs is Greece. This is the country that conquers the world. And then it says that the legs divide in two. And this is the Roman Empire. And the empire was divided between the east and the west. Now the western part of the empire fell in 476 A.D. And that's the part that we're most familiar with, and it plunged our part of the world into what we call the Dark Ages. But the eastern part of the empire did not fall for 1,000 years later. And the eastern empire, the Byzantine part of the Roman Empire, did not fall until 1453 A.D. at the hands of the Ottoman Turks. So the empire, the Roman Empire, really fell with the Ottoman Turks, and the Turks didn't fall until the First World War. So that gives you your sequence of history here. And so he says this last empire, the Roman Empire, is divided, the two legs. But then I want you to notice here that in verses 44 and 45, he jumps over to the last days. And he says, God will establish a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. So here he says that the kings here, the ten kings, that is, those that are represented by the ten toes on the 2 feet, are destroyed by the God of heaven, and he establishes a new kingdom. All right? Are we together on that? That's the only conclusion we can come to it, is the conclusion thus far. That's the dream. Now, at the end of this, we're not going to read the rest of it, but in verses 46 following, Nebuchadnezzar is delirious. He says, man alive, you're it, guy. You're really it. It was obvious that the hand of God is on you. And so Daniel's exalted and made the top dog in the kingdom and so forth, simply because he was able to figure this thing out. And so the narrative continues. But the part we wanted to see was the dream and its interpretation. That's the first of the visions given to Nebuchadnezzar, interpreted by Daniel. Together? You got a nod. Let me know you're still with me. Okay. All right. Chapter 7. Let's take a look at 7. No, not here. But see, what we're going to find out is that these visions build on one another. And that's the thing I want you to see, the continuity of the visions. All right. Chapter 7. Let's pick it up at verse 1 and let's start reading.
In the first year of Belshazzar, the king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream, and a vision passed through his mind as he was lying on his bed. He wrote down the substance of his dream.
Daniel said, I saw in my dream by night, and behold, the four rings of heaven were stretched out of the great sea.
Okay, now I want you to notice there's four in number. See, just like the body was divided in the first vision into four parts, now the analogy is four different animals, four beasts. All right? Verse 4 gives us the first of the four. All right, now this one, again, was the lion, and it represents Babylon. Now, verse 5. All right, let's pause there. Now, the second one, represented by the bear, is, as we note here, the Medo-Persian Empire. Now, we're not really sure about those three ribs. It may represent the three kingdoms of Babylon, Lydia, and Egypt, all devoured by the Medo-Persian Empire. But nobody's really quite sure exactly what those three ribs represent. Verse 6. All right, let's pause there for a moment. This leopard had four heads. In other words, it was divided into four parts. And this represents Greece, with the leopard, the four heads. Now, Greece came in to play through Alexander the Great. Now, we're all familiar with him. Now, we may not know some of these other characters we're talking about, but Alexander, we're all aware of. Alexander is this guy from Macedonia who conquers the world. And this is a chart of his conquests. How he moves across from across the Bosporus there. Come on, help me, historical buffs. What was the name of that? It divides the continent of Egypt. Of Europe from Asia. Yeah, the Black Sea is above it, but it's the Hellespont is the word I want. And he goes across there, and he begins his conquest of Persia. Goes down into Egypt, conquers that. In other words, going right through the Promised Land, right through Israel. See, and Israel now is back out of captivity, and it's now conquered again. And he moves on up, eventually ends in all through India, goes on up into Afghanistan, and finally dies. And they get this great big sarcophagus and put him in it, and he ends up in the city of Alexandria, named after him in Egypt. And the city of Alexandria, Egypt, was named after Alexander the Great. Now, when he died, his kingdom was divided into four satraps, or four provinces, by these four satraps or generals. And the four were Macedonia, here, and then it was the Syrian province here, and the Egyptian or Ptolemy province down here. The Syrian province was by the king, or one of his generals, so the Seleucians. And they had a dynasty that they set up. And then down here was the Ptolemy. And he had a series. And the last of the Ptolemies was who? Check out in your history. Ptolemy was one of Alexander the Great's generals. The last of the Ptolemies, the last of his lineage, was who? Cleopatra. Okay? And she had a son by Caesar. Caesar, Julius Caesar. Okay? Who, and then he was killed in that end of the line. Now, the reason this becomes important in prophetic history is that these two were rivals, and they warred against one another, Syria and Egypt. And guess who was right in between them? Okay? Israel. And so that's why all of the prophecy in Daniel comes into that focus. And then, of course, the other one was this part over here, Persia and that area. So those are the four heads mentioned here in verse 6. Verse 7. All right, now here we have the ten again. See, we had the ten toes in the first one, the ten horns in this. We're not told the kind of beast, but we just know that it's a dreadful beast. It emerges with ten horns, that is, ten kings. Then, notice what he says in verses 8 through 14.
The
Okay, keep going. We'll go through 14. All right, now, let's pause there for a moment and take a look and see what we've got here. First of all, we notice that the little horn comes to power. In verse 8. And as concerning this, it says in verse 12 that he had dominion, the beast had dominion for a season and time. Now, we don't know how long a season and time is right here, but we'll find out later on what that is. So let's take and read the interpretation of this, and we'll begin at verse 15, and we'll read to the end of the chapter, and we'll maybe comment as we go along here. Okay, let's pause here for a moment. Now, notice between 17 and 18, he jumps. See, he talks about the four kings are going to rule. And remember, those four kingdoms are the Babylonian, the Medo-Persian, the Grecian, and then the Roman. But then he jumps, like he did in the earlier verses, for example, verses 9 following, and I beheld the thrones cast down, the Ancient of Days, and so forth. What he does is he jumps clear over to the end times. And there's a huge period there that's left as a gap. Now that period of time, see, is the time of the Gentiles. See, the writers in the Bible are not only address Gentile history as it relates to Israel. And so there's a gap there. So I want you to notice here that he jumps between 17 and 18. All right, let's pick it up from there. Verse 19. Okay, now, remember, it's out of this fourth beast that the little horn comes. See, because the fourth beast has 10 horns and then the little horn, which destroys the 10. And out of him, then, see, comes these terrible times. And Daniel says, I don't really care about those other three beasts. What I want you to do is hone in on that fourth guy and let me know a little bit more about him. Tell me about this fourth beast now. And so now we're going to get some insight on this fourth beast. Okay, now, so remember the little horn is waging war against the saints until the Ancient of Days intervenes. Now remember, this is the very thing that we saw in the book of Zechariah. You see, the nations come against it and are besieging it until the living God intervenes. All right? So here we have that same picture again. Let's read on. All right, let's pause there. Now, these 10 kings come out of this beast. Now, the beast, remember, is the Roman Empire. And out of the Roman Empire comes these 10 kings, or these 10 nations. And I know that a lot of you who are familiar with prophecy know that some people, many people, put a great deal of emphasis, for example, in the common market, because they say, oh, it's the resurrection of the old Roman Empire. Because remember, it is out of the empire, the Roman Empire, that is the beast, that comes these 10 nations. And it's out of those 10 nations that the Antichrist, the little horn, comes. That's what he's saying here. And so they say, now, we had 9, we're looking for the 10th, oh, Greece joined, now we've got the 10th one, now it's all set up. And you read this kind of literature. Now, we don't know for sure. We're going to come back to that again. But we don't know for sure that those 10 nations have any prophetic significance. We're not saying that they don't. We're just simply saying we cannot know for sure. But I mention it here because that's where these prophecy buffs get it. Are we together on that? They get it from right here. The 10 kingdoms, out of which comes the little horn. Okay, let's read on. Okay, let's pause there. Now, that's an interesting figure. See, it says time, times, and a half a time. Now, he talks about it in verse 12, and he says, for a season in time. Now, hang on to that. Mark that in your Bible. Circle that. Do whatever you want, because we're going to come back to it. He refers to that again and again and again. What does he mean, time, times, and half a time? Well, if time is years, it would be a year, years, and a half a year. That's 3.5 years. But we can't tell that from this passage here. We're going to have to wait until he develops that in some of the other visions. But I want to draw your attention to it right here. Okay, let's read on. Okay, now I want you to notice here that at the end of the rulership of this little horn, which lasts for a time, times, and half a time, God sets up His everlasting kingdom. See, now we're at the end times there again. See, now whether that end times, the everlasting kingdom, is heaven, or whether it's the millennial kingdom, still He's talking about the little horn ushering that in. So we're talking about the last days now. And we've jumped a huge quantum jump in history, as he's moved methodically from Babylon, which he said, you know, you are that head, you know, to Medo-Persian Empire, to Greece, to Rome. Out of Rome comes the 10 nations. Out of that 10 nations comes the little horn. At the end of the little horn comes the eternal kingdom. So he's talking about the end days here. Are we together on that? Okay. That's exactly how all of us feel. I mean, he describes us exactly. Okay, so I've charted it here. See, the lion, the bear, the leopard, the beast. We don't know what kind it is. But it moves us down in history to the 10 horns corresponding to the 10 kings. The little horn rules for 3.5 years. He's destroyed by the Ancient of Days, and God's kingdom is established. We're seeing obliquely. We're seeing through a glass darkly. We don't see all that much. But this much we do see, because that's what he says. All right? Now we go to the next one. Chapter 8. Now, it is about 2:07. Do you want to pick up 8 tonight? Or do you want to take one more right now? That's a miracle in itself. All right. I can if you can. All right. Okay. Daniel chapter 8. Now remember, in these chapters, 7 through 12, where the vision is given to Daniel, Daniel's not interpreting the vision. See? Daniel interprets the vision in 2. But in 7 to 12, it's being interpreted for him by an angel. And in these, the focus is always on the same thing, the one great ruler in the end time. And this great ruler in the end time is called the beast, the little horn. Elsewhere, he's called the Antichrist. And all the historical references in Daniel point to this one bad guy. He's center stage. Now, here, in chapter 8, we're going to get a prototype of him. There's a guy that appears in Israel's history that is like him. It's not the little horn, but it's like the little horn. Now you say, Henriksen, how do you know it wasn't the little horn? Well, we'll get to that. We'll cross that bridge. But I want to warn you ahead of time, this is not the guy. He is an example of what he's going to be like. He shows up in history, and the prophet, looking in history ahead, says there's going to be a guy creeping up, and when you see him, he's not going to be the little horn, but he's going to show you how bad this guy is. Now, this fella shows up out of the Seleucid line. Remember I told you that there were the two warring sections out of Alexander's groupings. There was the north, that of Syria, the Seleucids, and south in Egypt, Ptolemy. And they're at war with one another, and one of these guys comes down and desecrates the holy place. And his name, hang on, is Antiochus Epiphanes. How in the world would you like that name? I mean, if you think that increase matter would be bad, how about Antiochus Epiphanes? I was wondering here if I had it spelled out here for you. All right. Okay, let's take a look at him. Let's pick it up at verse 1. Just pause there for a moment. Now, we noticed here that the ram had two horns. And this was the two aspects of the Medo-Persian Empire. One horn each. But a goat comes up out of nowhere and tramples the ram. That is Alexander. And Alexander tramples underfoot the Medo-Persian Empire. Now, remember, the Persians had tried to conquer Greece. And so there was animosity and hatred there existing between these two great civilizations, that of the West and that of the East. The Persians of the East, the Greeks of the West. And so Alexander came and trampled them. And you're all familiar from your history books of what he did there, as he just walked all over the mighty, invincible Persian Empire. And many times his armies were outnumbered 10, 20, 30, 40 to 1. And he still just decimated them. Now, what he says here, that the goat waxed very great and was strong, but then the goat broke up into four parts. Remember we said that the Alexandrian Empire broke into four sections. The Macedonian, the Seleucid, the Ptolemy, and then the Persian empires. These four. Now, Let's read out. Verse 9. Okay, now the beautiful land is Israel. Now the little horn comes out not of Rome here in chapter 8. It comes out of Greece. And we say, whoa, wait a minute now. So we got a different horn here. So let's read on and see what we get.
And it grew up to the host of heaven and caused some of the host and some of the stars to fall to the earth and trample them down.
It set itself up to be as great as the prince of the host. It took away the daily sacrifice from him, and the place of his sanctuary was brought low.
And on account of transgression, the host will be given over to the horn along with the regular sacrifice, and it will fling truth to the ground and perform its will and prosper.
Then I heard a holy one speaking, and another holy one said to that particular one who was speaking, how long will the vision about the regular sacrifice apply while the transgression causes horror, so as to allow both the holy place and the holy host to be troubled?
And he said unto me, unto 2,300 days, then shall the sanctuary be cleansed.
Okay, let's pause there for a moment. Now, in verses 9 and 10, it says that this little horn persecutes God's people and defiles the angelic host. Defies the angelic host, which is protecting Israel. And then in verses 11 through 17, it tells us that his days are 2,300 days. So, in 171 B.C., 171 years before Christ, this man, Antiochus Epiphanes, emerges as the eighth ruler in the dynasty of Seleucus. And he comes down in his reign and he desecrates the holy place. And what he does is he goes into the Holy of Holies himself, and he sacrifices a pig, which is an unclean animal, to the Jews, and he offers the blood of the pig on the holy place, in the Holy of Holies, there in the in the Holy of Holies there, where the mercy seat is and so forth. Now that's the worst possible thing you could do to a Jew. Number one, go in there yourself, and number two, take the blood of a pig in there and offer it on that mercy seat. So that was the most blasphemous thing. If you wanted to hold the Jewish religion in absolute, utter contempt, there's nothing worse that you could do than that. 171 B.C. was when he came into rulership. Now, 2,300 days later, Antiochus Epiphanes died. That was 164 B.C., and it was during that period of time that verses 12 and 13 take place. Now, Antiochus was not the Antichrist mentioned elsewhere in Daniel, Matthew, and Revelation. He is mentioned here to portray what the Antichrist will do to Israel in the end times. See, he is not the Antichrist. He is not the little horn that brings desecration to the holy place. And the reason we know that is turn with me to Matthew chapter 24. Somebody read verse 15. Matthew 24:15. Or whoever's next in line here as we were reading. Tom, were you it?
Yeah. So when you see the horrible thing told about Daniel, the prophet, standing in the holy place, note to the reader, you know what this meant.
All right. Now. Now. This terrible thing is how you have it in your translation. Let's get some other translations. How do you translate this terrible thing in Matthew 24:15? The abomination of desolation. Any other way of saying it? Pardon? The awful horror. Any others? Desolating sacrilege. Okay. Now, it's obvious. Two things are obvious. One is Antiochus Epiphanes came before this was written. So he's history. And the second thing that's obvious is that the abomination of desolation spoken of in Daniel the prophet is future from Christ. So it's obvious that this little horn here is not the little horn mentioned elsewhere in Daniel. Antiochus Epiphanes is not the Antichrist, because Jesus said he's yet to come. And when the desolation of abomination kicks place, then you'll know. All right? Any questions on that? Now, let's get the interpretation of this. And then we'll finish the interpretation and we'll quit. All right? Let's read on. Verses 15 following. Okay, so here's Gabriel now entering in and telling Daniel what the vision's all about. 17. Daniel 8, verse 18. Okay, see, now that's what we talked about before. You may have said, now how did you know that the ram with the two horns was Medo-Persia? He tells us. So, it's not that I'm all that smart, he just says it. How about you thought before you read that I already had some inside scoop here, huh? Okay, let's read on. Okay, see, now this is all we've been talking about. We mentioned that as we went along, and we confirm it by the fact that that's what Gabriel said is the fact, all right? Well, let's read on. 23. Again. Amen. Huh? Now, if my lectures have not made you sick for many days, I'm less than Gabriel. All right, and so you see here, what I've done is I parallel this along with the other three visions. And we'll stop here, and this evening we'll pick it up with chapter 9, vision number 4, and then the conclusion. And you'll see how the thing progressively shows you a little bit more each time on what's going to happen in the end days. Any question on this? Yes. Yes, it comes out of that 10 nations. It's called the little horn. Yes, but we don't know where the 10 nations are. We don't know what 10 nations. We just know that it's a remnant of the beast or the empire of Rome. Yeah. Yes, Tom. A leopard.
Yeah, or a ram or whatever.
Right. He says the leopard represents Greece, or the ram represents the Medo-Persian Empire.
Okay, so now this may not be a connection at all. I'm trying to feel my way through this thing.
Sure.
What you're saying is that if a person takes a position, let's say the amillennialist, he would say that this is not a literal.
No. The amillennialist has no problem so far. You can't argue with it because he says it. The only guys can argue with this so far is the guy who says it probably was written sometime after the fact, around the second century before Christ, not by Daniel, but by some later guy who looked backwards instead of forward. But, I mean, nobody's going to argue with this because, I mean, it's so clear. So, yeah, all millennials would have no problem with where we are so far in Daniel. And by the way, this is the reason, I'll leave this with you, this is the reason why critics have never been able to get along with the book of Daniel. Because there's somewhere in the neighborhood of 250-some reference, 252, I think, or something like that, references to prophetic events that have taken place with such precision that the unbeliever says there's no way that anybody could predict that. It's got to be written after the fact, not before the fact. And so they say, Daniel, the Daniel that we know, did not write this. It was a guy calling himself Daniel wrote it, oh, a couple hundred years or so, maybe 150 years before Christ. Well, the date on Daniel would be, oh, I don't know what, about 560, something like that, 520. It runs a period of time there. It's during the Babylonian captivity. Listen, I'm amazed you're still awake.